What's up, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of District Baseball. You're here with Nick and Trey, as today we talk about the Hall of Fame ballot. We give our votes, we talk about the ballots that we've seen submitted so far, and everything in between. It is going to be a very, I would say, contentious episode, but I think actually we're on the same page with the guys we want to see stay on the ballot in terms of staying above 5%, the guys that shouldn't be getting votes that are. And the guys that definitely deserve to be in, but the Hall of Fame voters are a bunch of snobs. Regardless, we'll talk about all of that today. Trey, what's going on?
Getting excited for another off-season of Hall of Fame discourse that always goes well. So we're going to do our Hall of Fame votes. And if you can't tell by our tones, we're more big hall type guys. We're going to vote for, you know, quite a few of these guys. And I think that you should at least vote for probably at least five of them. Some people with the votes that do or have access to the votes that don't do that. So we don't have votes, so we're just going to do something theoretical and fun. So if you have your picks, make sure to leave them in the comments as well. Nick, where do you want to start?
I think the logical place to start is to just give our ballots. Mm-hmm. We can kind of talk about the guys that I think are shoo-ins. In my case, and you kind of alluded to it, all the guys I'm voting for, I really think should be in the Hall of Fame. And, you know, that might sound pretty self-explanatory, but it's not when you're thinking about the Hall of Fame vote, because sometimes you want to vote for guys just to get them enough percentage of the total vote to stay on the ballot, which again, you need 5% to stay on the ballot year after year. And then you get a max of 10 years. And if you don't get in after 10 years, you fall off the ballot. Or if you don't retain your 5% or don't even hit 5%, you're just off the ballot after that year. So Trey, I think you're going to have some guys you vote for that are more so to keep them on the ballot for a discussion later down the line.
You have one.
Yeah. So like in that case, it's definitely a discussion. You just want to see them stick around. You don't want to close the door. But for my case, I have nine votes. All nine of my guys, I really think should be in the Hall of Fame, obviously for different reasons, but we'll talk about all of that. So if you're looking at the Hall of Fame ballot, we're going to go column by column. The first one that I think is a shoo-in, maybe not the safest word to use, but a guy who I think deserves to be in, that's Carlos Beltran. Carlos Beltran was always like a really, really good hitter. The one concern I have of him is the whole sign stealing stuff. And something we probably need to mention when we're doing, our votes and going through this conversation, just the character clause is a real thing. Whether you like it or not, whether you agree with it or not, it just is. And as kind of slap on the wrist as the sign stealing stuff was, Beltran took a lot of the hit or a lot of the blame for it, whether it was truly him or not, we'll never know. So I think with how snooty some of these Hall of Fame voters are submitting blank ballots and egregious things like that, I do think Beltran might face some obstacles in his pursuit to be a Hall of Famer. But like, if you look at his stats, like he was very, very good, played till he was 40, which I think I know longevity matters, but like playing late into your 30s proves something as well. Like you weren't just a front loaded, you performed, you kind of stat padded a lot of your career stats in your early to late 20s, and then did nothing when you're 30. Like Beltran was steady throughout, and I think he deserves to be a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, it's a consistency factor with right. Beltran, the longevity. He had that. He had the hitting. He had the field, the glove, and he had the stolen base. And I think that he was just a very, very good hitter, a very, very good fielder, and a very, very good base runner. And you put all that together, you have an elite player. The sign stealing scandal, I was a little concerned, and then I saw that he got almost 50% of the vote on his first pass around. So I think he's going to be fine.
Worth mentioning. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's not going to be a guy that makes it this year, but he will. But he'll make it before 10. He'll probably make it within the next 5 years, I would think.
Yeah, agreed. And that's another thing with the voting. People are like, oh, I'm not going to vote for this guy this year because I don't want him to be a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Which I do that, by the way.
I think it's so stupid. If you're a Hall of Famer, you're a Hall of Famer.
Guys specifically, I have a little.
The real hitch. Distinction is unanimous or not, or how much of the vote you got. Like, I remember, was it Jeter or Griffey or someone where one guy didn't vote for them?
Yeah, Griffey didn't.
Yeah, because
the only unanimous is Mariano.
Mariano, yeah. Where one guy didn't vote for that, I think it was Griffey,
yeah,
just so he wouldn't be unanimous. Like, what the?
Griffey didn't do roids. That's my only thing. If you did roids, I'm not letting you be a first ballot, but that's my only stipulation.
I mean, we'll talk about that later on with some of the guys on the ballot. But to me, it's like, if Hall of Famer, yes or no, like that, you know, everything else is just semantics and arbitrary bullshit that, you know.
I don't know. I love strategic voting. I think it's fun.
It's just so stupid to me.
It is kind of dumb, but then you're like, I don't know. It's like a game.
Yeah. Well, I guess it is a game. We're voting on who played the game the best. And in my opinion, this next guy is, I'm skipping ahead here. So, no, he is next. I had it. I'm good. Next guy on the list is, in my opinion, one of the best players ever, never to win an MVP. And part of it is just the era he played in, or at least the prime of his career in that era.
I got a lot of steroid
era. Adrian Beltre. Mm-hmm. I think he is, if you want to dive into the, should he be a first ballot guy? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, he should. Like, MVPs be damned. He is very good. And if you're going to be a big proponent of the character clause, it has to work both ways. Like, that's just how it should work and how it has to work if you're going to really be that, you know, intense about it. And Adrian Beltre was a phenomenal ambassador of the game. Like, just, you can go down a long YouTube rabbit hole of all the top moments of Adrian Beltre just having fun on the baseball field and just being a really good, you know,
just having fun, man.
Representative
that's an off season. Every off season, I go down that rabbit hole.
And it's like, you can't in a vacuum, you can't vote for a guy to be a Hall of Famer just because he's a good guy. But like, if you compile that with Adrian Beltre's goodness stats, yeah, he's a Hall of Famer.
Oh yeah. No and doubt. It's not even particularly close. He has like over 90 career WAR. I mean, I know WAR's not,
which is unheard of nowadays.
Oh yeah, by the way. For sure. And he's a guy who didn't even really, I mean, he had a great season in 2004, and this is what I was going to talk about with the MVP stuff. He finished second in 04. I don't know if you remember this guy Barry Bonds. He had like a 1400 OPS that season. He won the award. So there's your freaking MVP season for Beltre. But yeah, he never won one, but he was clearly good enough. And amazing defensive third baseman. I don't think it gets talked about as much as like Roland. Adrian Beltre and Scott Roland are very, very similar defenders. And Adrian Beltre had more offensive capabilities.
Right.
And another thing about Beltre is he acquired most of his WAR after age 30. I mean, this dude was a really late bloomer when he was on the Rangers. That was the best part of his career. He was in his mid 30s by the time, I mean, late 30s by the time that was over. So he had the longevity and he had the stats. And he had the good guy aspect. Like,
right.
I agree. If you're going to punish dudes that were, you know, kind of dickheads like Jeff Kent, for example, who I had last year, you might as well elevate the dudes who are good for the game. Mm-hmm. And Adrian Beltre, there's no excuse not to vote for him. Really. I don't think you can point to one. So he's got to be a first ballot.
Yeah. Like maybe this is very loose, like never winning a World Series, but even then.
Great baseball. Postseason performer though.
Right.
I mean, in the World Series, he hit. It wasn't his fault.
Right.
Go look at those numbers. I mean, they're pretty crazy in that World Series with him. But I mean, great postseason performer just adds to it. I mean, first ballot easily.
Yeah, agreed. All right, moving on. And I do want to clarify that Trey and I did not have the same exact votes. We had eight that overlapped. I had one that he didn't vote for, and Trey had two that I did not vote for, but we'll talk about those after the consensus votes. The next guy on the list is someone who I think you and I won't have any issue with. I obviously we're voting for him, but like any issue supporting his Hall of Fame candidacy, but amongst, you know, casual fans or MLB or Hall of Fame voters or whatever, there is a lot of discourse among his candidacy, and that's Todd Helton. The Coors effect is always going to be a thing. I think guys like Larry Walker getting in helps his cause a little bit.
Yes.
And I also do think there's like, he played in Colorado. He also played for what, 17 years? Like, there's plenty of, listen, there's at least 26 guys that play in Colorado every single year. Last time I checked, like they're not putting up the numbers that Todd Helton did.
Yeah.
Like Coors has been the same altitude for a long time. Last time I checked. So, you know, punishing them based on where they play, like they can't control where they play. Do they hit? Yes or no? Like that's kind of what it comes down to. And not everything in these votes and conversations will be as black and white as that, but like, why are we punishing guys for having a really long and very successful career? It just makes no sense in my opinion. So I think Todd Helton, I will say it's marginal. Like he's just getting in for me, but I'm also very comfortable naming him a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, I agree. Larry Walker getting in pretty much made Todd Helton's candidacy a lock. He got 72% last year. He's probably going to make it this year.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think he should. And yeah, I believe he had a 131 OPS plus on the road in his career. So it's not like he couldn't hit on the road. The dude was a great hitter all around. He just happened to play in Coors during the mid 2000s, which, you know, I will say one thing about the Coors effect is that it has become less so because the humidor and they used to have a short wall there, but it still is not enough to keep Todd Helton out of the Hall of Fame. This dude had two 400 total base seasons in a row. Nobody does that.
That good?
Nobody does that. Okay. It's like Todd Helton and Barry Bonds, like seriously. So yeah, Todd Helton should be getting in on this, I believe his seventh try. I would think he gets in though, having amassed 72% last year. But yeah, excellent, excellent hitter. The only real knock on him is that he wasn't the same level in his later years, but he was still pretty good. So, yeah, he definitely has my vote.
Yeah. I was just trying to pull up his, OPS on the road. All I'm seeing right now is his average. He's still a 285 hitter on the road.
So yeah, he was still, it wasn't as good, obviously, but right. Still really good.
But yeah, it was enough to support his home. Was there a Coors boost? Yeah. But like, it wasn't the difference between him being a Hall of Famer and him not being a Hall of Famer.
Let's just put it this way. He's not Dante Bichette. Okay.
Right.
Dante Bichette is a guy who got Coorsed. Okay. We can be honest about that. He was a bad hitter everywhere else. Okay. Mm-hmm. Todd Helton is not like that.
Agreed. All right. Next guy on the list. A very decorated player was on some of the great teams down there in Atlanta and was manning center field a lot of the time. And that's Andrew Jones. I've been banging this drum for a while now. And I think in a lot of guys' minds, like Andrew Jones is borderline. And, you know, again, this is all arbitrary. Like it's there's no like baseline for Hall of Fame voting. Like people use WAR.
That's
only
the truth.
When it's convenient to them.
Yeah. Right? Every single voter is so much different in how they see the game. So it's just so hard to put like a general standard, but yeah.
Right. So like for Andrew Jones, he didn't wow you. Like with the offensive numbers, aside from the home runs, I mean, 434 home runs in a career is like exceptional. Like there's nothing wrong with not hitting 500 home runs or only hitting 400 plus home runs. But like his career OPS is 823, just solid, like not bad, but solid. 254 career hitter. Not bad. Not great. So it's like in that regard, people will get so caught up in just the on paper numbers, be like Andrew Jones wasn't a Hall of Famer, but like if you saw him play and on some of the best teams as well, like you realize Andrew Jones was a staple, right? He just didn't, he wasn't like some of the other guys we'll talk about on this list or some of the other guys who have gotten in recently where all of their production as a baseball player came on the offensive side of the ball. Andrew Jones hit home runs and played premier defense in center field. Like, is that not a Hall of Famer? Like what are we talking about?
That's the thing. It's like, if you, so, I mean, Andrew Jones is arguably, if not the best defensive center fielder ever.
Right. Right.
And he hit 434 home runs. That's a Hall of Famer.
Right. Exactly. Right, so
that's as simple as it needs to be. The best center field defender ever also hit 434 home runs.
Right. Yeah.
And he did it. He wasn't even playing by the time he was 34. I mean, this.
Yeah,
he did most of his damage as like a freaking young 20s guy. Like, it's crazy. His career is nuts.
I think post age 30, he hit like 40 home runs.
Yeah, total. And he wasn't the same defender, but like,
right.
All the production on those Braves teams is more than enough to be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah,
in my opinion.
So many of these Hall of Fame discussions have become so convoluted. Like, Andrew Jones is a guy where I really like. Hey, did he play great defense in arguably the hardest position to play? Yes.
One of them.
Was he on a great team consistently? Yes. Did he hit, like, you know, in any regards, whether it was home runs or on base or whatever? Yes. Like, okay.
It's pretty simple, I think.
Moving on. Like, Andrew Jones, Hall of Famer. All right. Next guy on the list. That's actually a guy I voted for. So, next guy on the list is someone, again, contentious for different reasons. And this is where we dive into the steroids of it all. You and I both voted for Alex Rodriguez. Listen, you can feel however you want to feel about it. And to be honest, like, there's not much I can say to like change your mind. That being said, look at where there are clear instances of like pointing to a season. You're like, he probably did steroids then. Yeah. But also look at the rest of his seasons too, where like he definitely wasn't, where it was pre or post. Basically, when I think A-Rod steroid era, I really think Texas.
Yeah. Seattle A-Rod, I think personally was clean and
agreed
was unbelievable.
Agreed. So it's like, if you can't fully filter out all of the steroid era stuff, and you can't, like, you like logistically but just morally, whatever, you can't filter out the stuff. He did steroids, but there's also steroid users already in the Hall of Fame. So it's like, if you're going to hinge your vote on that, then it's almost hypocritical in some regard. But like, you look at A-Rod and the things he was able to accomplish around that Texas time, like the early 2000s, and you're just like, holy hell. Not to mention, we don't know what his career would have looked like defensively, because he was a really good shortstop and then moved to third base to kind of give way to, quite frankly, a worse
defender.
Right. Like, and he played a great third base too. So it's just, you know, this is where you really need to dive into the conversation. And in a lot of respects, I think a lot of people have already formed their opinion on A-Rod. It's pretty cut and dry. If you look at A-Rod the player, it's you're unquestionably voting for him to be a Hall of Famer. If you're saying it's a no-go because of the steroids, you're not moving off of that. For me, I truly don't care about the steroids. And I know some people are going to disagree with that and hate that. But one, like I said, there's people in the Hall of Fame that have already tested positive. And two, it's just like, it's not an excuse, but it's the time frame they were playing in. It was so commonplace.
Yeah, there's plenty of guys who did steroids back then who were not on this ballot.
And then, there's plenty of guys who did steroids and didn't get caught.
Were not this good.
And then there's plenty of guys who did steroids and were nowhere near this good.
Yeah.
Like, those are two unequivocal truths about the game. So it's just like, is there a boost? Yeah, but if you kind of like take away his Texas years, and he still has, over 500 home runs and probably a career WAR around like 80.
Yeah,
I mean, it's it is what it is. But I A-Rod's like one of the best players ever, in my opinion. And I don't think a Hall of Fame can truly exist if he's not in it.
Yeah, that's kind of my thing as well with the steroid guys. I don't like, for example, we'll get into it, but like, you know, a guy like Rafael Palmeiro, probably a Hall of Famer without roids.
Mm-hmm.
With them, no. A-Rod is like has twice as much WAR as that guy. He had two Hall of Fame careers in one at two different positions. Mm-hmm. So he's at such an elite level that without steroids, which I do personally believe, this is just an opinion, but I do believe in Seattle he was clean and he was still that good. So yeah, you tax him, you say, hey, I'm going to take 30 WAR from you because of this. And he's still like well above Hall of Fame standards. And that's really the thing. He was that good. And you can't tell the story of this game without him.
Yep, agreed. Cut and dry. I think A-Rod's a Hall of Famer.
Same as Bonds and Clemens.
I would have voted for as well, too, by the way.
And I would have voted for them because, again, they were so much better than their competition and so much better than other guys who did steroids at the same time as them. So it's tough, you know. I mean, and honestly, I can't really hate on people who don't give them votes because, yeah, they did do steroids. But at the end of the day, some of them are still better than others. So
right, exactly.
That's kind of how I see it.
And it comes down to like the point I mentioned, like there was plenty of guys who did steroids that were nowhere near as good.
Yeah.
So it's just like you got to factor that into account or take that into account as well. All right. This next guy, again, is another likely to be widely debated a candidate, and that's Joe Mauer. Joe Mauer, in my opinion, is a first ballot, no doubt, Hall of Famer. He played catcher, which is honestly probably, in my opinion, as like with my baseball background, the hardest position to not only play, but to be good at, to be an all-star Hall of Fame level. And not only did Joe Mauer do that, he did it while battling like an extremely long history of concussions that kind of severely altered what his, you know, outlook would have been like. Like he shifted to first base later in his career, but was still honestly solid. It's just, you know, profiling him as a first baseman isn't fair because he wasn't a home run hitter. Mm-hmm. But like, if you're factoring in what he did offensively as a catcher, there's very few guys in the history of baseball that did things better than Joe Mauer. And he's not a candidate yet, but it's the same reason in about 2 years or so, I'm voting for Buster Posey.
Like, I'm so excited for when Buster Posey gets on a ballot, because that's just going to be...
Because Buster Posey did things better than Joe Mauer did. He just didn't have the longevity.
Games. Yeah, I know.
In far fewer... So it's just like, you know... Again, I do have pitcher bias because that's my background, but like having a great catcher back there is like there's truly in that. That's why you see pitchers have their personal catchers, right?
And, oh, yeah.
You know, Joe Mauer did what he did and he was everyone's personal catcher. So don't look at the WAR because like it won't be there. Don't look at the home runs because they won't be there, but look at the whole profile. And it's pretty easy to me to see why Joe Mauer is a Hall of Famer.
You can actually look at the F4 because he's true. Got more F4 than a lot of guys that are in.
Yeah.
He's one of the most effective offensive catchers in terms of the hit tool. Because like you said, not a huge home run hitter, still had power, still slugged. But as a pure hitter, he was unbelievable. MVP winner as a catcher. That's tough. Very tough to do. That season, by the way, insane. You should check out the numbers if you haven't. So he gets a bonus for the MVP there. And yeah, I think that he actually lost some defensive value just because, like you said, he had injuries and he had to move off of catcher in his early 30s. Cause he was a good, solid defensive catcher, maybe not the best at any point, but very, very good. And he was definitely the best hitting catcher at various points in his career. Mm-hmm. So I feel like, there's plenty of catchers tough with the WAR and everything. Cause it's different than like other positions. It's normally lower because they normally don't play as long. And it's a lot of it's based on defense most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But with Mauer, he was such a good, solid overall catcher, great on offense, really good on defense. And a leader. Hey, you want to talk about good guy clause? Joe Mauer.
Right.
I mean, played all his career in Minnesota. He's from there. It's like a perfect, it's like a perfect good guy clause player to vote for. On top of the fact that he was elite and won an MVP. So, yeah, he would. I could understand if people maybe weren't, you know, because like you said, you know, if a Hall of Famer is a Hall of Famer, but you know, maybe some people would leave him off and add him on in a little bit of a weaker class. But I think he's good enough personally.
Agreed. All right. The next guy we voted for, I'll admit, I needed some convincing on my own because I left him off initially. And then I was doing kind of a deep dive and adjusted my bar a little bit based on the position he played. We both have Chase Utley on our ballot. I caught the majority of the tail end of his career, and Chase Utley is a guy that did most of his damage in his, mid to late 20s. And then once he hit 30s, he was fine, but certainly not, like, we weren't thinking Hall of Famer, just based on that production in his 30s. But like, Chase Utley was good for a long time, and longevity matters. And in his prime, in his peak, like that 27 to 32 range, give or take, he was very, very good with OPSs above 900, which from a second baseman is uncharacteristically good. And if you're looking at the Hall of Fame as a whole, like, there isn't much love for the second baseman. And I think part of that is we're comparing the second baseman to the shortstops, to the third baseman. I don't think you can compare any position to the first baseman, because like, whether intentional or not, like, second base right next to first base, some people might just be overshadowed by the first baseman they're playing next to. And obviously Utley played with some great ones like Ryan Howard, who, you know, was known for dropping bombs. But I can see why you might not want to put him in. But again, I think if you kind of adjust the bar a little bit, based on him being a second baseman and a pretty good second baseman at that, like, it's not just like, oh, he played second base, like, forget about it. Like, he was pretty good as well. I think he just gets in, but I will admit I'm not the strongest proponent of Chase Utley. I think he benefits from me just because I typically vote for those fringe guys so they stay on the ballot.
Yeah, and for me, Utley, it's tough because it's the second base position, really. It's the fact that there aren't more second basemen in the Hall makes it tough, because I try to compare to other Hall of Famers in the same position group, and there's not that many. But I will say he outpaces certain guys. Ryan Sandberg, he's a Hall of Famer. He's got more F4 career than him. He's got more F4 career than Jackie Robinson. Jackie Robinson played less games, but narrative ball. I would have voted for Jeff Kent, who is a far worse player, in my opinion, than Chase Utley, because he couldn't really play defense. But that's the thing. I think Utley's consistency on all three phases of play, he's got the bat. He was actually an insanely good hitter in his prime. He was a great defender, and he was a really underrated base runner. He's actually extremely efficient. It wasn't that he stole
especially
a ton
when he's
of bases.
Sliding into the shortstops to break up the double plays.
Yeah, we don't even get on him. But yeah, good base runner despite maybe not being the fastest guy. He has the ring. He's got playoff success, great playoff player. And fun fact, Jimmy Rollins won an MVP. Do you remember that?
I do. 2007,
Jimmy Rollins won the MVP. Chase Utley was far better that season.
I was literally just about to talk about his 2007 season, because he only played 132 games, had 22 home runs, 103 RBIs, had 976 OPS, and came in eighth.
He came in eighth, and it's not even that necessarily that he should have won, but he was better than Jimmy Rollins was.
Right.
So yeah, MVP caliber, and he was like that good, that level, for like five straight seasons.
Yeah,
of like eight WAR. So,
and those five seasons are doing a lot of heavy lifting.
I was gonna say, you're right about the lack of longevity. Even when he was playing later in his career, he wasn't the same guy.
Right,
he wasn't playing every day. He couldn't hit the same way. Couldn't defend the same way. But I think that he did enough in his prime to get in there. Yeah, because I do think we need some more love for second baseman. There's not enough. And even then, you got a guy like Lou Whitaker, who isn't even in the Hall of Fame. I found that out last night. I'm like, what are we doing here? Lou Whitaker's ninth all time in F4 for second baseman, and he's not in the Hall of Fame. I was losing my shit. But I personally would put Lou Whitaker in, and I would put Chase Utley in.
I think that's fair. All right. The last guy we're going to talk about in our joint that we're in agreement on is Billy Wagner. And relief pitcher is another position you kind of need to adjust the bar on, because obviously they're not going to accrue the war that any position does, especially starting pitchers. Like, you could almost need to reinvent the bar, because like for instance, for position players, like, or I guess pitchers too, 60 to 65 career war is like usually the benchmark, give or take. Mm-hmm. And with relief pitchers, like, if you're really, really good and have a long career, you might get 20 war. Like that, yeah. That's kind of what you need to look at. So you almost can't even include war when you're talking about relievers. But for me, when I think of a relief pitcher, it's how dominant were they? Not just good. Like, this is going to sound so backwards and totally anti-baseball purist, but like, I think anyone can rack up saves. Like, anyone can have years where they like lead the league in saves. If you're like a quality reliever on a good team, you're going to rack up saves.
Yeah, that's a like, secondary.
Saves are a team stat.
Yeah, I feel it, because there are people who say saves are the big reliever right. stat. But I think they're important later on down the line after you get through some other stats first.
Right. So like for me, I immediately think, how dominant were you? Because again, you might, like, for example, like if Billy Wagner played with Mariano Rivera, Billy Wagner's not saving games over Mariano Rivera. Like, so, you know, you can't always use saves. And obviously Billy Wagner accrued many a save on his own, but like, he was extremely dominant practically every single year. He had one year in his 16-year career with an ERA above 2.7. Everything else is usually sub 2.3.
See, I know that already, but just hearing you say it out loud is just silly.
Yeah. Yeah, like this is a guy, and we don't hear it as much now because the reliever usage is much different than it used to be. But like, Billy Wagner was a guy that was in Cy Young conversations because of how dominant he was. And I think being a lefty and just being who he was, like, we need to show love for second base. We also need to show some love for relievers too. Like, Billy Wagner was dominant, and not just dominant. He was dominant for basically 16 years. Like, we'll call it 12 of the 16 years, he was absolutely dominant. Three of the other four, he was very good. So that's basically what it comes down to. Any knock on Billy Wagner is basically you don't like relief pitchers.
Pretty much. And I think it's like Andrew Jones for me. It's very simple. He's the best left-handed reliever ever. It's pretty
case
easy.
Closed. Done. Over.
I feel like if you're the best at any one position, you should probably be in. And it's the consistency too. Like, because we know relievers, they don't always have a good season two seasons in a row. They don't always have a good season three seasons in a row. Talk mm-hmm. about pretty much 16 straight years of dominant relief pitching, not just good, dominant relief pitching. And he also had his best season, probably, arguably, at age 39. So theoretically, he could have kept going if he wanted to.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, one of those. Mm-hmm. Late 30s, which you're not supposed to have your best season then. So
he had a 1.43 ERA.
Yeah, his last season in Atlanta is
nuts.
Silly. Just absolutely silly. I mean, if you want to talk about going out on top, geez.
69 innings pitch that year.
Nice. And yeah, he's throwing 70 innings at age 38. Like the high end of relievers now. Like, Erasmo Ramirez had 80 something innings last year, and he had the most innings for relievers or something.
Yeah,
like it's nuts. So Billy Wagner should get in this time, based on the vote. It'll be close, but I think he's gonna get there. I feel like he has enough hype now and he's close enough to the end of his tenure on the ballot that he should get the push. At least if it's not this year, please, on his 10th year, get him in. This dude is amazing.
No, it needs to be now.
Like it does. Not. It does. I agree.
Yeah. All right. So that's our eight that we had in common. Trey, you had two guys that you feel strongly about that I do not. Why don't you break it down?
Well, I've got one that I feel strongly about.
Okay.
The other one I'm like, tough, but I'm going to give him my vote because it's his last chance.
Yeah.
So I'll go ahead and start with him. I'll start with Gary Sheffield. I personally I did not vote for him last year. If I had more than 10 last year, I would have, but you don't, so I didn't. And it was tough. I went back and forth a lot on this because in terms of the bat, Gary Sheffield was incredible, an absolutely amazing right-handed hitter, had some absolutely elite season, MVP caliber on the offense. He's also the worst defensive outfielder literally ever. I mean, it's not even particularly close. He was so bad. The thing is, he wouldn't be playing outfield nowadays. So if I think about modern standards, he'd be a DH or a first baseman or something. That wouldn't help him necessarily that much, but it would help him a little bit. And because of that, I think I'm going to give him the nod, even though he was on Balco. It's tough. There's another guy who you'll get into who is a similar case who, again, if he doesn't get in by year 10, I'd probably give my vote, but it's tough. Cause like with the steroid guys, I like to have a guy, if I'm going to vote him in, that is so much better than everybody else or close to it. And Sheffield was great. And he was like, obviously Hall of Fame caliber, but he wasn't quite that good, but I'm still going to put him in. This is a tough one for me. I'm actually struggling with it right now.
Yeah. For me,
I'm going to give it to him cause it's his 10th year.
Right. And I completely, that's a strategic vote that you mentioned earlier. Like,
yeah,
just to see if there's enough support.
I don't and, you think,
know, do your part kind of thing.
I don't think he gets in.
I agree.
But it'll be close. And it might open the door a bit for A-Rod later because.
Oh, A-Rod, if that's the case, then he can have my 10th vote because I want A-Rod in.
Yeah. Well, so. the thing is, like, you know, Sheffield's a presumed steroid guy. If he gets, you know, 60% of the vote, that's like, okay, that's close ish and then it's like, well, right. A-Rod was about twice the player of him, so now what? And then it's tough. I think that it's never going to be perfect, obviously. I wish there was a way to put older guys back on the ballots. Like, I know they do like the Veterans Committee and stuff, but that's,
which is how Harold Bain got in.
Yeah, exactly, because it's basically like eight people. So yeah. I kind of wish that they could get some of these guys who got overlooked back on. I'll give Sheffield my vote there.
With Sheffield, it's like the defense matters.
And but that's really the toughest part because he could have been a bad defender and I would have been fine. It's just that he's literally the worst.
Yeah, exactly. And like, if you want to view him as a DH, which he was never really a DH, but like, I have no problem viewing him that way because same thing with relief pitchers and, you know, a second baseman, not so much, but like relief pitchers, like I think DHs just get overlooked. Like if you're the best at your craft, whether it's being a relief pitcher, whether it's a designated hitter, whether it's a pitcher only, like people still like the people who hate the DH think that pitchers need to hit. And I'm just like, that's so backwards. And that's not a conversation we need to get into, but like, if I'm just looking at Gary Sheffield's offensive stats, yeah, there's plenty there to go off of. It's just, if you're only doing one thing, if you're only hitting, if you're only pitching, if you're only doing one thing, you have to be like one of the best. And listen, Sheffield has over 500 home runs. Like, you could easily qualify him as one of the best. But if I compare him to the last DH to get in, Edgar Martinez got in basically on his last chance. He was a far better hitter than Sheffield was. So it's like, just going off that, I think Sheffield, for me, he's just on the outside looking in. If like tomorrow the Hall of Fame's like, hey, we're a little too strict with our voting, we're going to add some more guys, I think Sheffield would be like one of the first people in that regard. But like, with the standards the Hall has now, and listen, those standards are always changing, like based on who gets in sometimes. I do think Sheffield's on the outside looking in.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. Because, like, he's just getting in for me, essentially because it's his last year. I mean, I wouldn't have voted for him if it wasn't. But he's going to be exiting the ballot next year anyways, so that'll open up a vote spot, so I don't feel too bad about it.
Yeah. All right, what about your other guy?
Okay, so my other strategic pick is Bobby Abreu. I freaking love Bobby Abreu. I think that he...
Doubles machine.
He doubles machine. He was an on-base machine, which is personally, I think, where he kind of gets lost in the shuffle, because like you look at his base numbers, almost a 3.45 slash line, which is good, but it's not like that doesn't automatically make you elite. It's the, the on base. He was with guys who had as many plate appearances as him. He had over 10K in the outfield. He had one of the highest on base percentages out of all those guys. And that's something I think you need to look at a little bit. Also, like I said earlier, I like to go and look at contemporaries. Who are your peers that are in the Hall of Fame already? Right. Bobby Abreu has very similar career to guys like Andre Dawson or Dave Winfield, who are both Hall of Famers. He's got a better career than Harold Baines, who, again, that was a Veterans Committee, so that's tough. But if Harold Baines is a Hall of Famer, then Bobby Abreu is a Hall of Famer.
Then literally everyone's a Hall of Famer.
Pretty much, so... But I think something else about Abreu that gets lost is the stolen base, 400 stolen bases. And he was an efficient base stealer as well, 77% for his career. So I think he does deserve a little boost based on that. That's 400 steals. That's a lot. That's like top 75 all time. And then you add the offensive capabilities, the on base, the consistency factor, 14 seasons of at least a 350 on base percentage and 8 seasons of at least a 400 on base percentage. So is he, I think actually, yes, he's a Hall of Famer based on other guys at his position that have gotten in that are either just as good or slightly worse. And I think he'll stay on the ballot for 10 seasons. I don't think he'll make it, but I'd like him to, because I think he was a really good player and he often gets kind of lost.
Yeah, for me, he's another guy on the
and presumably clean in. As well.
Right, right. Which isn't, part of the conversation.
And he was in that era, so it's
right.
Yeah.
For me, like, just a very, very solid and quality ball player. I just don't think the peak was ever high enough.
Yeah, that's fair, and I agree, because he didn't have the high peak.
Right,
he didn't have an MVP season or something that was.
He never finished top 10 in MVP vote.
Yeah, so. Arguably should have a couple times, but
sure. But I'm just saying, like, he never did. He never had that one season where it's just like, holy shit. Like, yeah, this is, like, he had some great seasons. Don't get me wrong. But like, the consistency and the longevity needs to support the dominance. And just like the dominance needs to be accompanied by the longevity and the consistency, and for me, like, he has two of the three. But he's missing that also critical third one, and that's the dominance.
Yeah, he wasn't a purely dominant player at any point. That is true. He's kind of similar to Mark Burley on the pitching side,
right?
A guy who
it's a really good comparison.
Really consistent, above average pitcher, threw a ton of innings. Mm-hmm. But was he ever that good? No, he had a couple starts here and there where he had no hitters and the perfect game, obviously. But
yeah,
never a full season where he was purely dominant. He was actually I did have him on as a strategic vote last year. But I dropped him this year so I could add Maurer and Utley. But Bobby Abreu, I think should stay on the ballot at least for sure. And then you had one that I did not have. So would you like to get into that?
Listen, I mentioned it earlier that I don't really care about the steroid era. I think it's part of the conversation for sure. You can't just totally discount it. But listen, there's a difference between being clean and just never having gotten caught, in my mind. Like, I think there's plenty of guys who managed to avoid all these reports and went on to have great careers, but it doesn't mean they were necessarily clean. We'll just never know. So I try not to put too much into it. And then I also believe that there's guys that got popped or were named just because they were associated, right? Not because they actually failed the test or if it was a false positive. Like, we just never know. So
have you ever looked into Sammy Sosa? about his situation. It's like he might not have tested positive for anything.
Right. And Sammy Sosa is another fascinating person to talk about. Yeah, just
if he's clean, he's a Hall of Famer. Easy. And like he might be.
See,
he might
I
have
don't
been.
Even think it's that easy. Like that's over true. 600 actually, home right. runs. I think he falls into right. that Gary Sheffield category.
Yeah. Okay. I'll give you that. I'll give you that. But if he was clean, I think I'd
But at least he won an MVP, Sammy Sosa, that is.
Yeah, he did do that.
Regardless. That's just to say I don't factor it heavily. I'm looking at the dominance, and like I just mentioned, the dominance needs to be supported by longevity and consistency. And this guy has all three. And if you have all three, you're getting my vote. And that's Manny Ramirez. And, you know, Trey pointed out before we start recording, not only did he get popped once, he got popped twice. And that matters.
Yeah. That, I'll get into that. Go ahead.
But like, if we're talking about the best players or like one of the best players in the game, at his like while he played and at his prime and all that stuff, Manny qualifies. And listen, there's a lot of personality and a lot of baggage that comes with Manny being Manny. Like that was legitimately a saying, high-fiving guys in the crowd as he's like throwing a ball in from the outfield, getting the guy out too, I might add, you know, hiding in the monster and like during the game,
cutting off weird a ball things. For no reason.
That one too. But like if you're going off sure dominance and being one of the best players in the game, like he had like 8 or 9 top 10 MVP finishes, never won one, but like was always right there, always in the conversation. And honestly, you look at the numbers without obviously knowing who won those awards and who finished ahead of him, like you look at his numbers in 1999. This going back a ways. Manny Ramirez had 44 home runs and 165 RBIs. He had an 1100 OPS, 174 OPS plus, and he only came in third in MVP voting. So
what year was that? Who was it?
99.
Who would have gotten first in the AL in the 99?
Like, and that might not even be like the most absurd season. With some of these numbers, like he led the league in slugging and OPS and obviously RBIs that year and like came in third.
I'm guessing a Yankee won it.
I can only imagine, but that's just to say that like if you're going off of the performance, Manny belongs. Like he deserves to be in without a shadow of a doubt. And the reason that really got me down this rabbit hole is in 2008, he was traded from Boston to the Dodgers in the I don't know if it was the infamous Boston LA trade with like Beckett and Adrian Gonzalez, but it was around the same time. So
it might have been.
It might have been. I can't actually remember. Regardless, in Boston, first half of the year, I think he was like age 36 season, so certainly not in his prime. Manny was having a really, really solid first half of the year, like a 920 OPS, like hitting around 300, had like 20 home runs at the time of the trade, you know, all great stuff. Gets traded to the Dodgers, and Manny has a 50 game stretch that I think would rival Barry Bonds. Like
it's pretty silly.
In Barry Bonds, like best 50 game stretch, I think Manny would get really close to it. And this is an age 36 season. He went 396, 489, 743 slugging for a 1232 OPS, had 17 home runs and 53 RBIs in 53 games. So that puts him on a pace for 162 RBIs over a full season. And that was age 36. Like there was calls for him to win the NL MVP being a deadline addition. Like that's how good he was in age 36. So it's just like that. That's just a one small part of Manny's career. I think he's a Hall of Famer. I think it's a very similar to the A-Rod conversation where it's like, if you are okay with steroid users, you'll vote for him. If you're not, then you won't. So
I would have if I had more than 10.
I would vote for him before Sheffield in a heartbeat. But I get why you're voting for Sheffield.
Yeah, I would as well if they were both on the same year. Yeah. Manny will eventually get my vote when he hits the 10-year mark. It's the fact that he got suspended twice. Cause like you get popped once, okay. That's bad, obviously. But getting it twice means he didn't really learn anything. At least
I wouldn't either if I'm dropping 40 bombs and 120 RBIs every year.
Yeah, I'm saying that's just how it's perceived by voters. It's like, well, you had a chance and you didn't use it very well. But like, there's probably other guys that did the same thing and didn't get right. caught. Yeah, he'll get it eventually from me. If I had more than 10, he would be on it. Cause yes, he's the best hitter on this ballot. There's just not really a question. I mean, regardless, we have his baseball reference page, which I just get so much enjoyment out of looking at.
Yeah,
so
he's one of the more fun ones for
that's
sure.
A Hall of Fame baseball reference page. There you go. So maybe we'll give him the BB Ref Hall of Fame award or something. But yeah, I like Manny. He'll get a vote from me when he's in his 10th year, maybe sooner, depending on what the ballots look like. But I didn't want to give him a spot over a guy who was clean or is graduating, essentially.
Right. That's fair.
Yeah. Cause like you point out A-Rod is still so much higher of a level because he was a great defender and Manny wasn't. But Manny was just as good of a hitter. I don't have any issue with Manny getting votes. I don't think he'll make it, but wouldn't mind it at all.
Hot take. Screw it. Hot take. A-Rod more deserving of being a Hall of Famer than Barry Bonds.
Ooh, that's tough.
It's hot. It's a hot take.
The thing is, the only stipulation really is like, we know Bonds fucking took some stuff, but like he never
failed the test.
Yeah, so it's like
never failed the test.
Yeah, but it was very close.
It's just widely assumed.
Yes, A-Rod as a whole, as like a overall player, he's better defender and base runner. I mean, Barry Bonds was a great base runner before he got to San Francisco, though. I should point that out. Before he bulked up a little bit. But yeah, so both guys obviously should be in.
You want to have a fun deep dive down a baseball reference page? Go look at Barry Bonds' stats in his age 42 season and tell me he wasn't blackballed from the league.
Oh, absolutely. There's no doubt.
Nelson Cruz is getting shots when he's like age 50. I mean, Julio Franco played until he was 50. And
yeah, Bonds could have easily DH'd for 3-4 more seasons.
Right.
He was definitely blackballed. That's
for sure.
Obvious.
All right. Looking at the rest of the ballot, we just want to run through quickly some guys that they fall into the Mark Burley category of like really good conversation, but ultimately not a Hall of Famer. Obviously Mark Burley falls into that category. For me, I voted for this guy last year, and you know, when I'm having to make cuts and really tough decisions, I just can't get there with him. Torrey Hunter.
Great player.
Love Torrey Hunter. Was one of my favorite players growing up. But like I literally had a really good comp for him in Andrew Jones, and Torrey Hunter was just never on the level of Andrew Jones.
Yeah, he was close. He was really close. Just didn't have the home run hitting ability as Jones. Right. But yes, defensively, absolutely elite.
Yeah. Andy Pettit is another guy I'm actually surprised you didn't vote for. And like there's some respects to say Andy Pettit's one of the best, if not the best, postseason pitchers of all time. But like his regular season career is basically Mark Burley.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm sitting at with Pettit. And also Pettit's a admitted steroid guy. Like he took HGH, he said he did it. So I mean, respect, honestly, for admitting it. And potentially another guy that could get a vote in his last year. But yes, basically Mark Burley with more playoff success and also took steroids.
Yeah.
So it's like those kind of even each other out in a sense, like
And
to the point where he's like Hall of very good for me.
Yeah, exactly. Right, exactly. And just a little bit more insight to my thought process, especially when it comes to like the steroid stuff. I don't fault guys for taking HGH.
It's more of a...
It's to get healthy.
Pretty much. That's at least why he said that he took it.
Oversimplification.
Yeah.
But, you know, it doesn't boost you to the effect that, like, anabolic steroids do. So,
True.
To me, there's a difference. I don't care about any of it. But like, if you, it's just how I am.
I just like exploring the nuance of each case because it's interesting, right? Personally, I don't really.
Right. But I think even without, like, let's say Andy Pettit's stats are what they are and he's not a steroid user, I'm still probably not voting for him.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with
you. So
I think it's so close though, just because he was that dude in the playoffs. That's definitely true.
You were so comfortable.
And he had a lot of opportunities and innings to fail.
Stone cold.
And did not.
Stone cold. Yep.
So I think that should only be a boost to him, and not take away from other guys who didn't pitch as much in the playoffs as him. But yeah, he still wouldn't quite get there.
Yeah. Another guy, Francisco Rodriguez, like just really he's that guy who is a quality reliever for many, many years. But I think he was dominant at times, but you know, you can compare him to Billy Wagner and he doesn't come close to what Billy Wagner did. So like if people wanted to vote for Francisco Rodriguez just to kind of readjust the bar for relief pitchers to get in, totally cool with that. And I almost gave him a vote still. But for me,
gave him a vote last year.
Yeah. Right. But for me, he's just a shade under where I would think a Hall of Fame reliever would be.
I think he's probably safe though to stay on the ballot because he did get almost.
I want him to stay on the ballot for sure.
Yeah, I think he'll stay on the ballot. But yeah, as for current reliever standards, not quite.
Yeah. Another one. That's worth mentioning just briefly. Like you don't have to go into too much. Is probably Omar Vizquel.
Yeah, we don't have to talk about him too much.
Yeah, you got to be careful.
He's screwed. He's not going to get in.
Yeah.
There's a reason why. If you want more info,
really
go
just,
check it out yourself.
That really just came to me as I said his name.
Yeah, I always forget he's there because like I basically disregarded him as a human being at this point. So
yeah, I kind of hand up. That's my bad. Don't vote for him.
Yeah, no, he's lost so much. Like he was like kind of tracking. Okay, he's not even good enough, dude. I don't care. Like he was a good
defensively.
Defender.
There are
better defenders than him, and he had an 82 OPS plus. Garbage.
Yeah.
Get out of
here. All right. The last guy that I know you really wanted to mention is David Wright, who I know has, you know, some of the ballots I've seen submitted. He has gotten some love. For me, it's pretty simple. David Wright was tracking very well, not only to be a Hall of Famer, but to be a no doubt Hall of Famer, and then injuries.
Yeah.
Like we can't go giving votes to guys who should have been Hall of Famers had they stayed healthy. If that's the case, Steven Strasburg is a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Dude, I'm so down.
So so it's like if we're doing that, then we got to do it for everybody. And like I can fully appreciate what David Wright was and should have been, but what he is right now is just on the outside looking in, and he's one of the biggest what ifs in baseball history.
Yeah, he's honestly, David Wright, like, I know he's a Met and everything, and we're not supposed to like them, but I like David Wright. He's from Virginia. Like, he was a good dude. He played hard.
Yeah, okay. If you're from Virginia,
lunch pail guy, dude. You know? No, I'm just kidding. But, yeah, he would have made it easily.
Yeah.
If he plays even a mediocre 30s, he makes it. Because his prime
his 20s
elite.
Were nuts.
Yeah, MVP caliber, didn't win one, but could have. Had multiple seasons with 8 WAR, I believe. So that should tell you.
Yeah, he just needed like 3 more seasons of 4 WAR, and he's in.
Yeah,
even and without the longevity.
His injury, spinal stenosis, it's different. It just he couldn't physically play at the end, and even honestly before the end of his career in like 15 and 14, he wasn't the same guy. So it's just a big bummer because like he would have been in if he had played a normal career,
right?
Which is tough. That's always the tough. Those are always the toughest. Like Tim Lincecum was on the ballot a couple years back.
I love Tim Lincecum.
Tim Lincecum, talent wise, Hall of Fame.
Yeah, he's gonna be like one. I don't know the stat, so don't quote me. But he's gonna be one of, if not the only guy to win multiple Cy Youngs and not be a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, and he'll be one. There's not many, and he will be one of them because just couldn't. He barely even made it 10 years to get on the ballot in the first place. But talent wise, yeah, he was there. So that's the tough balance between longevity and prime and all that. And for David Wright, it's just the fact that he didn't play in his 30s, basically. that yeah. took him out. So yeah, bummer, but we wanted to make sure that we point, or I did, I wanted to point out that he was really good. And he'll probably stay on the ballot. So that's cool.
I think so. But there's other guys like a Matt Holliday, very solid, not really close to Hall of Fame caliber in my opinion. But guys close. Like that, that will fall
off. If he was a better defender, he was just bad. He was a bad defender.
Yeah. But like Bartolo Colon's on the ballot. Like,
yeah, good for him.
That's a guy that's, yeah.
Won a Cy Young. Yeah. Shouldn't have.
He can have both his families vote for him. Like, but yeah, like there's plenty of other guys that will fall off. So if you're.
Yeah, a lot of really good players that.
You just need 5%. I think.
Yeah.
A guy like Wright will stay on.
Yeah. Adrian Gonzalez is there too. He was a great hitter. Jose Bautista, great hitter. And I mean, he's another what if, basically, if he figures it out earlier. What does he right. do? Because
his second half of his career was great.
He was just purely bad in as a right. young player. Like, it wasn't even like he was okay. Like, he was just bad. It actually hurts him a lot, because if you look at his total war, this is funny. I will point this out real quick, not to go on too many tangents here, but his total war on Baseball Reference is 36.7, but his war seven, so the best seven career seasons, was 38.2. So he's actually making up negative war that he accrued when he was younger, because he was just not a good player yet. So, but great career in the back half, won an MVP, awesome, fun player to watch.
He didn't win MVP.
Donaldson won it. My bad.
Yeah.
Could have actually, did he not?
Nope.
That's kind of crazy, because he had
he really just had one, like he had
182 with the home runs. Plus and 11. That's pretty good.
He had years with the home runs, but yeah, 11 was really the only year where he was a really strong candidate for it.
Oh, that was JV's year. Yeah, okay. I can't really fault that. JV was pretty ridiculous.
Oh, you said JV, and I thought Joey Votto, and I was like, what?
No, oh, yeah, yeah. No, the year Verlander won, yeah.
That's... Yeah. Which I love when a pitcher wins MVP.
Could have given it to Bautista, but yeah, I would say Verlander was the correct one. That's another thing that we could do at some point, is just go back and look at the old award voting, because it's terrible.
that'll be fun. That'll be fun. There's plenty of like, what the hell happened?
Yeah. Oh, tons of them. Yeah. It's honestly one of my favorite things to do. Is just like the Juan Gonzalez MVP award.
Plenty of rabbit holes to dive
down. Yeah, I won't. Yeah, we got to stop, because I keep going into tangents.
Yeah. All right. Let's wrap up this episode. Just a quick recap of what's been going on since we last recorded. We've finally gotten some movement in baseball. Obviously, the last time you heard from us, we were giving our predictions for free agency. We've had a couple of signings so far. Nothing. Not as much as I would have liked, but we got Aaron Nola was the first domino off the board. So both you and I were wrong. I was close. I'd said Eduardo Rodriguez.
Yeah, mine were flip-flopped on the
what'd you go?
The Nola Gray.
Nola
re-signed. We didn't say that. Nola re-signed with Philly. We should point that out.
Yeah, the Phillies made Nola their priority, re-signed there. And then the Cardinals just recently pivoted, because they were heavily involved in the Aaron Nola discussions. They went out and signed Sonny Gray. So I think you're not alone in that. A lot of people probably had those flip-flop, thinking Nola would sign elsewhere, most likely St. Louis, and Gray would be the consolation prize for Philly. But it was reversed. And if you want to talk about Sonny Gray, you got to talk about the Cardinals as a whole. They went out and signed Lance Lynn and Kyle Gibson as well. So now their starting rotation is Sonny Gray, Miles Mikolas, Lance Lynn, presumably is their three, Steven Matz, or the ghost of him, is their four, and Kyle Gibson rounds out the rotation. I think their median or average age is 35 for the starting pitchers. So going full on Mike Rizzo here.
Really weird. Just a really weird rotation as strategy. It currently is. I mean, they could do more, I guess. They could, like you mentioned before we started, that they might look at Glass now and on the trade block. But yeah, if this ends up being their rotation, it's very bizarre. Not necessarily the worst in baseball, but weird.
Very, very odd. Like, I have no problem paying Sonny Gray. Like,
yeah, that was
very
fine.
Quality pitcher. But like, if you need a guy to spearhead your rotation, why not go get two-time Cy Young Award winner Blake Snell, or you know, Japanese phenom Yoshinobu Yamamoto, or you know, Eduardo Rodriguez, who's a little bit younger, or, you know, plenty of options to go out there, or like outbid Philly for Aaron Nola. Like,
yeah, that was
Nola's deal was pretty respectable. I don't have it in front of me. It's like 6 years, 170 million or something. Yeah, like
it wasn't ridiculous. It wasn't something that the Cardinals couldn't have been in on. So,
right. So I think it's just a matter of how badly do you want it?
And yeah, it's very the Cardinals weird.
settled very quickly. It's one thing to do this in February after you missed out on everyone. It's another thing to do it in November before anyone signed.
Yeah, it kind of seems like the Cardinals are trying to just resuscitate this team that they have and try and keep them afloat for the short term, when in reality it may be best for them to start moving towards blowing it up, because you got Goldschmidt, who is on the decline in the aging curve, and then Arenado did not play very well last season. So you can't really rely on him to be the MVP caliber guy he's been when he wasn't. And two of his three seasons in St. Louis have been
not great,
whatever, you know, good, but not great. So is this a team that is still in a contention window? I don't think so, but they seem to want to believe that. So we'll have to wait and see if they do more than this. Kind of becomes mute because they'll have one of either Lance Lynn, Steven Matz, or Gibson head into the bullpen, which would be ideal for them, because right now this rotation does not scare me. So
yeah, it didn't scare me last year. It certainly doesn't scare me this year. I mean, they tried to trot out a 40-year-old Adam Wainwright as their ace last year, which did not go well. And like, this gives me shades of 2020 Nationals. Like, obviously you take out the pandemic part of it in the shortened season, but like the Nationals never really replaced Anthony Rendon. They kind of just hoped that they would do enough, and like, they didn't know how badly Steven Strasburg was going to be, you know, injured, and they didn't know how poorly Patrick Corbin was going to pitch, but like, there was never really the full effort to double down. It was just kind of like, all right, let's see if we can make magic happen 2 years in a row. And obviously it didn't. And the Cardinals obviously never got to those highs, but like, not trading for Juan Soto, for instance, or anyone else, it was just kind of a signal like, hey, they weren't fully certain. And now they're in like a really, like, if you want to keep your prospect, that's fine, but blow it up. And like, let's go full young.
Yeah, they're just trying to like stay afloat.
Right. Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah. If you're gonna do it, then do it. Like, right. I mean, it's like, because I'll tell you what, Cardinals fans have seen this movie before. They've seen it too many times now, and they're gonna start getting mad, and they are mad because they've been doing this for a long time, and even the years that they've won the World Series, those teams weren't good. Like,
right,
they were, they just fine, got hot at but the right they got time. Yeah,
like
they,
the 83 win Cardinals won the World Series. Mean,
come on, man. Yeah. That team to even get in the playoffs in that format is luck on its own, and then to make it happen is just okay, well, you did, but
yeah,
those teams weren't built to win the World Series, they just happened to do it.
Exactly. So we'll see if the Cardinals have any magic this year. I mean, the Diamondbacks were right there, so I don't think if the Cardinals can add 12 wins.
Oh, yeah, they traded for Suarez as well. We forgot to mention that.
Oh yeah,
they did. They made a move for Suarez from Seattle, so they have filled their third base spot.
I thought the Diamondbacks traded for him. Oh,
yeah, that's what you just said, right?
I thought you were talking about the Cardinals.
The D-backs. Yeah, sorry, the D-backs. We just forgot to mention that trade, but yeah, there was a trade. Suarez went to the Diamondbacks. I don't remember who they gave back, but
Mariners doing their Mariners and a reliever. Yeah, like, you know. It just wasn't. I don't know what the Mariners are doing. Like, you think Cardinals fans are mad. I think Mariners fans, like, they were on the cusp, and now they're all of a sudden they're selling.
This, yeah, it's pretty ridiculous. I, if this is, you know, we still have a whole offseason left, but Seattle is on notice because they've already got players. First of all, players, Cal Raleigh calling out their ownership for not spending. And then you're going to go trade one of the more important pieces in that run.
40 home run caliber guy. You're just
Teoscar Hernandez off. Is also not there anymore, so
right, it, like, but it's so odd because they went out and traded for Luis Castillo, they went out and signed Robbie Ray, who I know was hurt, but like, there was the effort.
It's very now weird. So
they went out and traded for Eugenio Suarez last year and traded for Teoscar Hernandez, and now they're just not doing anything.
And they seem to be okay with just being decent.
It's like, how are you going to sell at the deadline and then blame your team for not making the playoffs? Like, yeah. What are you doing? The reliever you sold, Paul Sewald, he was like instrumental in the Diamondbacks World Series run.
Massive for them.
So it's like,
yeah. You're going to tell me Paul Sewald doesn't get you three more wins?
Right. Because they were right there to like the last day.
They were there.
So it is what it is. The other two moves, Kenta Maeda, 2-year deal to the Tigers, and Jason Hayward, a 1-year pact to return to the Dodgers. Either of those stand out to you?
I pretty much figured Hayward was going to return. I was hoping the Nats would take a look at him, but
he would have sucked here.
Like, yeah, it's a good fit. You know, he found his spot. He's a
4-war player in the Dodgers.
He found his spot. It makes sense. For the Nats. Yeah, it makes sense for him to return there and try to run it back. And Maeda, I mentioned that I felt like the Tigers were going to do something on our free agent prediction episode, but Kenta Maeda was not in that list of players we talked about. But yes, they did do something. Solid. Not a huge move, but solid pitcher, guy that can start or eat innings in the bullpen. And for the Tigers specifically, I believe they might have had the least amount of starting pitching innings last season among guys that are still on their roster. A lot of injuries there. So they definitely need some innings.
Good news for them. I have a guy that recently just threw 180 innings and was the opening day starter for an MLB team last year that is available. And if the Tigers would like Patrick Corbin, please give the Nats a ring. Just one final note, and I think it's the perfect bow for this episode. Jason Hayward, higher career WAR than Harold Baines.
All right, I'm out.
All right, that does it for today's episode. We appreciate you.
That's so stupid.
Sticking with us.
Wait. For real?
Yeah, look up.
No, man.
If we're doing this, I mean, we're already over an hour. Like, we can just do
it. I'm gonna, it's fine.
Christian Yelich, also higher career WAR.
That makes more sense than
Hayward
personally.
Wow. Garrett Cole above there. There's someone else, but Jason Hayward was the real funny one, that he has a higher career WAR than Harold Baines.
So funny, because most of his WAR was collected within the first 5 years of his career.
He was an insanely good defender. I remember the Cubs gave him that deal basically for his defense.
Yeah, I mean, he was good defender there too, but damn, yeah.
Yeah, he struggled. But yeah.
It's pretty crazy. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah. But anyways, that does it for today's episode. I hope you guys enjoyed our Hall of Fame discussion. We will dive back into the offseason when things start rolling, hopefully here before the holiday season. I think most teams like to get most of their spending done prior to the new year. I think the winter meetings are in 2 weeks, if I'm not mistaken. We should see some more action then. So we will dive back into that conversation then and see where our predictions stand up. I think it's safe to say neither you or I will do pretty well.
So, yeah, no, we're already 0-2 on the big free agents.
Yeah, and it doesn't seem like it's going to get any better, but who cares? We won't have to talk about it. Yeah. All right. Appreciate you guys listening. Be sure to subscribe to the YouTube page if you're listening to this on the audio platform. And if you're watching on YouTube, we appreciate you. And make sure you are subscribed so you never miss a video that we upload. Again, appreciate you listening. Follow us at our handles below. The main account on Twitter is at DistrictBSB. We will catch you guys next time. Later.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.